This episode is brought to you by UCAN, the only sports fuel of its kind and a fuel that helps you thrive in sport and life with stable blood sugar, metabolic efficiency, and of course, tasty fuel anytime, whether you're working out or working at your computer. And I want to talk about something new that UCAN is offering right now. It's a new training bundle that allows you to sample a variety of UCAN products and see what works best for you. And for a lot of us, maybe that's all of it, right? So, but it allows you to give a full sample and test at a discounted rate. And in this training bundle, you can test out UCAN's brand new energy gel. It's called Orange Edge. And it is amazing. It's something that so many of us have been waiting for so long. An energy gel that has 0 grams of sugar, but 15 grams of superstarch, and is conveniently one of those things that you can carry on your long runs without having to make a mess or get anything messy or even mix a gel yourself. The training bundle also offers an energy tub, an energy with protein powder tub, electrolytes, and you can customize that based on the flavors or preference you like, plant-based or otherwise. So check that out. It's UCAN's training bundle. And of course, Endurance Planet fans get 15% off UCAN products anytime with code ENDURANCEPLANET2021. That's the numbers 2021 and Endurance Planet one word. So Endurance Planet 2021 at UCAN.co. Or instead, you can have that discount conveniently be applied by going to our website, enduranceplanet.com/shop, or directly to the show notes for this post at enduranceplanet.com or through your device where you listen to podcasts. So enjoy that. Again, Endurance Planet fans, 50% off UCAN products. We always love hearing from you and what you are loving about UCAN these days. Let me know, and I want to hear more. Do you love the new energy gel? Is it working for you? Did you feel like you actually got that extra edge? Write in at admin@enduranceplanet.com and let us know.
Started 2 kilometers to go. Everybody is at the limit of their speed.
This could be one of the great wins in the history of the Boston Marathon.
That relief, yes, is the only thing they could say.
Can they get the world record? It's a tough world record.
Welcome back to Endurance Planet. This is your host, Tawny Gibson. And on this episode, I'm so thrilled to welcome Mary Beth Gangemi to the show. Mary Beth is an expert in holistic health, breath work, strength training, and natural movement. And she is teaching others near and far to optimize their well-being. Mary Beth resides in Pittsburgh, North Carolina with her family, where she teaches strength classes and more from her studio, which you can learn more about at her website, kairostrong.com. That's K-A-I-R-O-S, it's the word strong.com. Of course, we will include links to that in the show notes. Some of Mary Beth's certifications include being a certified Buteyko breathing method instructor, a Strong First School of Strength Level 2 certified kettlebell instructor, a certified Level 2 MoveNat instructor, and Original Strength Level 2 certified coach. In this episode with Mary Beth, we are going to take a deep dive into breathing, identifying what dysfunctional breathing is, and also defining what is healthy, proper breathing, and of course, then how to optimize your own breathing, as well as tie all that breath work discussion into a bigger discussion in the realm of holistic wellness by covering topics like natural movement, outdoor play, and so much more. I hope you're inspired by this conversation. Mary Beth is available through computer sessions as well as in person at her North Carolina studio for classes and instruction. So if you hear this episode and you feel more inspired to learn about movement snacks, natural movements, anything that may feel like something you want to dive deeper in and integrate this into your day, and of course, that includes individualized breathing exercises, then Mary Beth is here to help you. And we have her contact info at the top of the show notes for this episode. So head over to enduranceplanet.com for that. In the meantime, I sincerely hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you have any follow-up questions for Mary Beth, please email us at questions@enduranceplanet.com. Okay, we are back with Mary Beth Gangemi. And Mary Beth, it's so good to have you joining us on Endurance Planet. I feel like this show has been a long time in the making, and I'm glad we're finally doing it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned in the intro, Mary Beth is the wife of Steve Gangemi, the sock doc, who's been on our show multiple times. And, you know, after spending time with their families, you know, several times, a couple times over the years, you know, just really, I feel like Mary Beth has a unique perspective that is very much in alignment with the type of things we like to discuss on Endurance Planet, and takes, you know, the idea of holistic wellness for athletes to another level. So I'm really excited to dive into all the topics we have on our agenda today. Guarantee we won't get to everything that we've been discussing in her and I, our pre-chat. But where I want to start is with Mary Beth. You know, you're a mom of several kids, three kids, you've homeschooled them. And this is kind of like everything you're doing these days has been like a slow build of like kind of like V2 of your career. So if you could just give us a little bit of your background, you know, what you've done in your professional and personal life, and then really kind of what got you motivated to become a certified expert and instructor in all the things that you're doing these days. I'm curious, like, why that was something you wanted to pursue professionally.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I studied social work in college and started working with children with special needs and their families. Some of the children had medical needs that they were going through different treatments for, and some just were like developmentally delayed or just, you know, special needs. And so I really started to work with those kids and those families, but I was doing it more as, I would say, like play therapy. And I would go with them to their various therapists. So for example, I would kind of follow that child and go to physical therapy or speech therapy and then home again. And so I could see what the whole holistic component of that child's experience was and that family experience, you know, how they interacted with siblings, how they interacted with their parents. You know, and what I would do is basically create games so that the family could work on the goals that they were getting from the various therapies and also be just spending time with their child, and their needs or their desires for what they wanted to work on could be addressed. So maybe it was like, you know, I just really want this child to be able to brush their teeth without a fight. It's like no one else is really thinking about that or looking at that. You know, so we kind of created games and ways to work on things. So that's kind of where it all began. And I learned a lot from how development works, how, you know, therapies can really make a big difference. So then basically had my own kids later on, you know? So kind of could see and apply a lot of what I had learned into my own home.
Mm-hmm. And did it feel then like, it sounds like with that background and working with kids, like it seemed like for you, homeschooling was a very like natural transition, not a struggle in the way that I think a lot of parents might view it. For you, it seemed like you were already kind of doing that work with kids in such like a intimate kind of setting within homes and therapies and everything. It seemed like the homeschooling just felt like a natural, like, of course, this is how I want to raise my kids.
Yeah, that's, I mean, I didn't set off thinking that, but that's exactly what it turned into. It was like, oh, I know how we can make, you know, this really fun way to work on, you know, learning this or doing that or following the child's lead, to explore and be excited about things and asking questions. And so it sort of set me up that I was then doing that and really had a confidence that, like, you know, I can trust that the child's going to learn, develop, and grow. And I just get to go along for the ride and, you know, facilitate and guide some along the way, of course, but just a trust that it was going to all fall into place. And, you know, at first when I had kids, I was actually still working and doing home visits. And at first I would bring, I, you know, worked with families that this was, you know, an appropriate thing, a situation for, and I would bring my child and we would do a session together so that the, you know, child I was working with could sort of have this play dates essentially, but facilitated with me and could really work on social skills and other things. And then of course I ended up having another child. So now I was not really going to travel with two kids in tow because it just became too much. But that's when I stayed home with them and really focused on, you know, just raising my own kids at that point, and really ended up homeschooling them, because when my oldest got to be, you know, kindergarten age, I just was not ready. I was like, oh, there's too many fun things to still do. So we planned a garden, and basically it was like kids in the garden all that year. So, and then, it was like, oh, well, next year we'll start school. And that next year just never happened. And now my oldest is off in college. She's 19. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, and, you know, we've kind of talked on the side too, as we visited, and I feel like this could be a whole nother podcast on yourself, because I'm so fascinated by the homeschooling world, and it's something that we're debating too. And you've shared a lot of insight with me. But, you know, tell us how old your kids are now, and like kind of then as you picked up, like you didn't get back into working with kids per se, but now you're working with adults. Maybe some kids come in along and some, you know, with parents and do some of your classes, I'm sure. You have things like that. But tell us what then got you more into kind of this natural movement, breathing, you know, strength training world, and making a career out of it.
Yeah. So basically, as you know, your kids get, the kids start to grow. I mean, you start to feel like you just need your own outlet, like just for your own stress relief. So I was, you know, going to gyms and training and running a lot of trail running, just, you know, for my own. And I just started to really see all those things that I had that background of learning, how it could help and how it applied. And it wasn't just for people who have, say, a balance disorder or, you know, a sensory integration problem, but that a sensory rich environment and balance work and all these other things could really help everyone. You know, whether it's just to be an even better athlete or an even better person or feel better, you know. So it basically started to be that I just, you know, trained more and more, and then integrated the family, you know, because sometimes you just have kids in tow, you know, they're with you. And so it was like playing outside, you know, crawling, creeping, climbing, monkey bars, swinging, jumping on things, off things, over things, you know, building from there. And of course, then I went and got certified and trained to really, from the different modalities that I teach, to really make sure that I was, you know, having a systematic approach and knowing, you know, what all goes into it. And, you know, people then started working with other people. People wanted to join me. So it was training other people, saying kettlebells or natural movement. And, you know, I do work with children as well still. It's just that it's not my only focus. Like you said, there's some kids that come to me with, you know, sometimes it's asthma, sometimes it's ADD or autism, or just struggling, maybe just struggling and just wanting an outlet, you know, and families, and sometimes it's siblings together. Sometimes it's a parent child combo that comes, and then a whole lot of, you know, parents, adults, whether they're parents or not, people that just want to train, or, and a lot of people, they just want to know where to start. They want to know where to start because sometimes there's not a whole lot of information. It's like, you know, they haven't really been consistently training. And then they're like, should I sign up for a marathon? Should I sign up for a half marathon? Because they heard somebody got in shape doing it. Then they end up, you know, trying something like that and ending up, you know, with some injuries or other things that stop them. So kind of looking at some creative ways that you can start and stick with it.
Yeah. And that's what I want to bring to this show, especially like creative ways for endurance athletes, which I'm sure is like 99.9% of the people listening in, but also endurance athletes who really care about their health as our audience. And I want to explore some creative ways that people can integrate, you know, some of the things that you teach and promote, and I know are doing on the ground level for yourself, and obviously have been, like, personally and with your family and otherwise for now decades. Because, like, what I see here, there's this theme of, like, you know, we're in this world where we're pushing, and we're, you know, chronically facing these nervous system imbalances, chronic stress. You know, many of us are so stuck in a sympathetic state. I know when I work with athletes myself, you know, when, especially when I'm doing consult, it's not so much about how we need to train, but how we need to chill out a little bit more. And so, you know, whether that's through nutrition or diet or more sleep, whatever, but I think you also have like some really interesting things to bring to the table. And so where I want to start then, you're certified in the Buteyko method. And I want to get started with that because some people may not exactly understand what Buteyko is. There's several different modalities and ways of, you know, breathing instruction out there these days that have really come to the forefront. There's a gajillion podcasts on how we all need to breathe better and how our breathing is dysfunctional. So I want to start off with some basics for our audience just so they can understand. So I can understand a little bit more too, because this is actually fairly new to me as well. Let your Buteyko instructor tell us what that means and what this particular philosophy promotes. Let's start there.
All right. Yeah. So I am trained as a Buteyko instructor and also as an oxygen advantage coach. So they're slightly two different things, but they're both breathing methodologies and they overlap. So basically, Buteyko was developed from Dr. Buteyko in Russia in the 1950s and eventually moved to Australia and UK and over to the US. And it's basically talking about the value of switching from habitual mouth breathing to nose breathing. It also talks about, you know, really accessing the diaphragm and relaxing the diaphragm. And overall lifestyle, holistic lifestyle of how you eat, when you eat, do you eat in a hurry, that type of thing. Because those things impact how you breathe. Mm-hmm. So Buteyko is really a series of exercises to retrain your breathing.
Okay. So we get that the mouth breathing is like the, probably like the easiest one to identify. But beyond that, what other kind of like dysfunctional breathing patterns do people exhibit, you know, breathing more like accelerated breathing, even when you don't need to be kind of in like such a heightened state or things like that? Or is even like sighing or that shallow upper chest breathing? Yeah. Can you describe some of like the dysfunctional patterns that we can look for in ourselves and times that we don't even necessarily need to have that kind of dysfunctional pattern happening?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, definitely, like you said, you want your breathing to feel calm and subtle and relaxed. And you might just have a sense that it doesn't always feel that way. Sometimes you notice that you're thinking about your breathing or you're hearing yourself breathe. If you notice a lot of chest movement while you breathe, or if you're it's actually easier to look at someone else and notice it on them than it is for yourself. But maybe if you have someone who can look at you while you're not thinking about your breathing and sort of give you that feedback, if that's something you want, to notice if your breathing is more, 360 degrees around your body, horizontal, like moving outward, expanding and back in, or is it more vertical where you're rising slightly and falling? So there's that. And then of course there's like excessive yawning or sighing or congestion, you know, that you're not sick with anything. It's sort of just this congestion that you've often have to deal with. Maybe you wake up congested and then it clears up throughout the day. You know, issues like asthma or other respiratory issues, stress, panic, anxiety, snoring, there's sleep disturbances, that can be a sign that you have dysfunctional breathing.
With the congestion, is that like an allergy thing that's exacerbated by poor breathing, or is it actually more, is a congestion caused in any way by poor breathing itself?
Poor breathing does cause congestion.
Really?
So there also, of course, could be that you're exposed to something, say pollution or an allergy or something that's then causing you to be congested. Of course, that happens as well. Okay. But inefficient or poor breathing literally does cause anxiety, and it literally does cause congestion. So sometimes, you know, you come in and you start working on the breathing exercises and you can really see a way to decongest. We have a breathing exercise to decongest the nose, because I can tell you, well, let's, you know, it's better to breathe with your nose, but if you can't breathe with your nose, then how are you going to do that? Right. So we got to like help you step by step. So you could breathe, start to be better able to comfortably breathe with your nose.
Right. Right. And isn't it so, like for people that have like, isn't it James Nestor's book, and he talks, he had, you know, actual structural problems. I mean, is it common for people to have like structural problems with like deviated septum and all that kind of stuff to the point where it's beyond their control? Or is a lot of this, have you found fixable just by implementing these exercises on our own and seeing things clear up, like metaphorically and literally clear up, just by doing the exercises regularly?
Yeah, well, you know, deviated septum is very common, and it can affect your breathing. But that doesn't mean that you're destined to sort of be stuck with dysfunctional breathing for the rest of your life, you know? So the exercises and these ways that you can start to work on that, definitely so many people have a deviated septum and they can still breathe. They can learn to breathe better and they can breathe freely and comfortably. But, you know, it's always individualized. And if, you know, there's going to be somebody, you know, who might have certain situation and they need to consult with, you know, a doctor or a dentist, who's trained in this, to figure out what they need. But absolutely you shouldn't feel like, oh, I've been told I have that, so I have to live with this.
Okay.
You know?
So, and then I was also thinking, tell me, like, hypothetically speaking, if this can actually be a case that is true, where I hear from a lot of people that say they wake up congested and then it kind of clears up throughout the day. Could we potentially make the case that those people are mouth breathers while they're sleeping and that's contributing to this level of congestion that they're experiencing upon waking? And that's kind of maybe why they clear up during the day as they maybe start nasal breathing a little bit more or something?
They absolutely could be. And, you know, you could potentially not be mouth breathing and still have a breathing, areas that you could improve your breathing, right? Breathing dysfunctions. But it's very common that the way you breathe during the day is going to influence how you breathe at night. And people don't realize that. So you can make your sleep better and your nighttime breathing better by working on how you breathe during the day. And the other thing that people really, I think, is an important thing that you can start to think about is to focus on what's your tongue doing. The natural resting place of the tongue is actually the roof of the mouth. And not just the little tip of it, but like 3/4 of the tongue, or a lot of it. And you can swallow and sort of feel, most likely your tongue will push up on the roof of your mouth. And that's the natural resting place and where we want it to be. So for some people, instead of just thinking about, I need to breathe through my nose, I mean, we do want to breathe through the nose, but instead of just focusing on that, focus on the tongue and see if you can swallow and that tongue goes up. And then if you can work on just keeping it there while you breathe.
Okay, this may be a dumb question, but where else would the tongue be? Like, do people like force it, like with use like their muscles to like push it down? I don't even know.
So what happens is, it instead of being pressed up onto the roof of the mouth, it starts to have a low tongue posture in the mouth. So it starts to kind of maybe be mid or maybe even be low. And then the next step usually is like your mouth will actually start to open. And your mouth doesn't necessarily have to hang open like in what you'd see in cartoons or something. Sometimes it's very subtle. So a lot of times I'll work with people and they won't even think that they are mouth breathing. They won't even realize their mouth is open. But if your tongue is on the roof of your mouth, it's pretty hard to have your mouth open and the tongue all the way up there.
Yeah.
So it sort of fixes
it right now.
You know, you press that. Yeah. Now, the other thing you're going to notice is when your tongue's in place on the roof of your mouth, you may feel like it's a little harder to breathe at first because you may not be used to it. And the nose does, when you breathe in through your nose, it does provide some resistance, right? It's not as big of an airway as your mouth is. So if you're used to breathing through a really big mouth airway, right? Now I'm asking you to breathe through your nose and you feel that resistance. And now I'm saying, put your tongue on the roof of your mouth, right? And that you might feel it really slows the flow of air, but that's really where we want it to be. So that slow flow of air helps you be better at actually utilizing the oxygen. So we're talking about better oxygenation in your body. So we want a slow, and you know, there's such the, you know, in our general culture, you know, we say, take a deep breath. So if your child or you or your spouse or a coworker is upset, we might well-meaningly say, take a deep breath. And most likely they're going to say that doesn't help. And you know, it's that big breath. Often when we say take a deep breath, that's actually what people do is chest. It's that deep, it's shallow, but big is what they mean by deep, right? Or is what they do. Mm-hmm. But what you really want to do is slow and low breath. So it's going deeper into your body, but not deeper as in bigger. Oh my, you know, God. A bigger flow.
It's funny because it's legit true. And I totally can think of a million instances. And in particular, we've taught Cora, like when she's like having some big emotions, like we'll work on breathing. But I think I've accidentally cued her wrong in doing exactly what you're saying, describing here. And she's doing what we're not supposed to do. So that's something for this mom brain to work on to recondition, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, that actually, you know, if you were to take a series of deep breaths, that's hyperventilation, right? Which is how we breathe when we're under stress.
Right, right.
So how do you breathe anxious? How do you breathe when you're stressed? Or, you know, that creates those feelings and is linked to that versus the opposite of how do you breathe when you're fully relaxed?
Right.
How do you breathe when you're feeling calm and at peace? So it is great to teach her about breathing, but the big breath thing is probably not going to feel so super helpful.
Yeah, no, it actually makes perfect sense now. It made me want to ask, you know, something as I've been preparing for this podcast, but also just in my own life, been taking a lot of steps to cue into things that maybe I've just been unconscious to and trying to be more conscious of myself. I've noticed, I'm curious how this kind of fits into the whole like breathing good or bad column. I don't even know. So you'll have to tell me and then maybe some exercises to do to fix it or repair it if need be. So like I'll be working or cooking is another thing, which, you know, cooking and working to me are usually not stressful things. Like there are things I enjoy and especially cooking, but I love my job too. I feel grateful for the work I get to do. So I don't sit down and feel like, oh, this is going to suck and be so stressful. So I'm usually in a good head state and mind state for the most part. But what I notice is that I get so focused on the task at hand and not really like from a stress perspective, just like focusing on what I'm doing, that I literally like forget to breathe and I'll like hold my breath. And it's not like I'm sitting there hyperventilating. It's not like I'm having like anxiety, but it's almost like I'm like under breathing. Like I'm like, oh, Tawny, don't forget, you got to take a breath now. So what the heck does that mean? And it would Buteyko show me to do something differently to, is that like causing a like sympathetic drive within me?
Yeah. So, you know, it sounds like it, you know, I know that you might think it's under breathing, but it's actually a clue that you might normally be over breathing.
Okay.
Because that's one of the things we do when we have a pattern of overbreathing is we start to do sporadic sort of unintentional holding the breath. And you know, I'm sure you've heard the expression, you know, don't hold your breath for something that's like not very likely to happen. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like this common pattern of when we're anticipating something or focused on something. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a stressful, unpleasant sort of experience, but just the amount of concentration or focus that it's taking is just enough to disrupt your breathing pattern. So, you know, it's just a clue that I think that it's a clue there might be some overbreathing. And, you know, I started to touch on this before. If you suspect any mouth breathing at night, or wake up with a dry mouth, or have to get up to go to the bathroom in the night, of course, you know, it depends. But a lot of times that's actually related to how you're breathing.
But getting up to too?
Yeah, yeah. So we see improve. And so, you know, what I would say to do is I'd be curious what your control pause is. And in Buteyko, it's called the control pause. In our Oxygen Advantage, it's called the BOLT score, B-O-L-T, for body oxygen level test. But it's a really great way. Yeah, it's a great way to sort of check to see how you're breathing and how your body is tolerating the CO2, right? So all you do is a normal breath in through your nose and a normal breath out. So let me just say what I mean by normal. Sometimes when people find out that they're going to be holding their breath, they try to do a preparatory sort of breathing a few times, really deep, sort of like a get ready breathing. And we don't need to do that. We don't want to do that. So what we just want to do is just the normal inhale through the nose, a normal exhale through the nose, pinch your nose, and time how many seconds until you feel the first definite desire to breathe. So it shouldn't be stressful. That's why it's like a control pause. It's just, it's not stressful. It's not like, oh, how far can I go? It's not a maximum breath hold. And then that's, you know, we start to look at that number.
Okay. Cause I think I was the podcast and research I did in prep for this. I did a controlled pause and I totally think I did that wrong too, man. I suck at breathing. No, I love it. I love using myself as an example because not only am I learning myself, I feel like there's probably a lot of people who are just similar to me and are probably like nodding their heads at the same thing. So I did it and I kind of intentionally took like a longer, like a pause before I exhaled to see like when it felt like kind of holding my breath to the point where like, okay, I need air like now. So that, and that was like 30 seconds, but I think the way you're describing it is that I was trying to force it a little too much. It wasn't a natural like breath cycle. Right. So I did it wrong.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Right. No, I think that, you know, you really want to, you know, sit down. So it's not like while you're active and, you know, out training or juggling a lot of things, it's like a calm time and you just do a normal breath in and no preparation, just normal breath in, normal breath out, pinch your nose, time it until you feel the first definite desire to breathe. And you may notice that first definite desire with a little feeling in your throat or a little feeling in your diaphragm. You know, some people feel it differently or just their mind just tells them like, okay, I want to breathe. Right. Yeah. And then you resume breathing through your nose. Okay. So you let go of your fingers that are pinching your nose and you resume breathing through your nose and notice, does it feel like you're kind of gasping and breathing heavy or does it feel pretty normal? You still want it to feel pretty normal. Okay. Because this was a comfort pause. And really, you know, that number starts to tell us a lot. And you don't just do it once. We do it like often and we can kind of measure our progress on these breathing exercises. And we can start to see that control pause increase. And it just feels like the time just goes by quickly. And you're like, wow, that's already 30 seconds or 35 or 40, you know? So anything under 25 seconds is strongly suggestive of some type of breathing pattern disorder. Okay. But we really want the goal to be more like 40 seconds. And, you know, you got to be true with yourself because some people have more personalities that they want to be competitive and they want to do it well. And, you know, it's really just for your own measure. If you do this each day, for example, you start to see your own picture of like, is it getting easier, you know, or maybe I overtrain or, you know, trained heavy one day and I'm still in recovery mode and you might see that control pause come down.
Okay.
You know, and that's okay.
Let me ask.
It can just be a guide.
Okay. So I did, like I said, when I did this, I had 30 seconds and it wasn't a struggle whatsoever. Like that felt super comfortable. However, I wouldn't normally hold my breath or, you know, wait to exhale for that long. So is that wrong? Was I doing it wrong? I totally love what you just said about like, don't try to be competitive here. You want this for your own gain. So you don't have to like try to force it to be perfect to like prove to any, like you want to like be honest with it. So I'm trying to better understand if I'm doing it incorrectly or correctly. Like, so should it be like a natural breath that I would just be breathing anyways and time that, or am I kind of like seeing how long I can tolerate before I really do need to take another breath?
You are trying to, you're trying to hold it. It's not like your natural breath.
Okay.
Like your natural pause probably wouldn't be that long. So it's not a normal, natural sort of breathing, but at the same time, you shouldn't be doing any of the prep that you did. Like,
gotcha.
You know, to, okay. And cause that will change your results a bit. And you want to make sure that when you let go of your nose, that you could regain your breath. You just resume breathing through your nose and it's pretty comfortable. It's normal.
Okay.
You know,
it's not like you did like some, you know, free diving, you come up and you're like gasping for air. Like you definitely don't want to feel like that.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. Right. And so the most, you know, one of the best times to take your control pauses first thing in the morning, it tends to be lower at that time. So just a heads up that if you take it first thing in the morning, it tends to be lower, but it tends to be the most accurate time. And so, you know, I just start my day, you know, when I wake up first thing, I just take my control pause and I just keep track of it because I'm just curious about it. And I like to watch what it's doing. And that's the most accurate time. And you really want your morning control pause to be over 25. You know, in the research with asthma and other conditions, they saw that, you know, symptoms reduced significantly once they got over 25 for consistently over 25 for a morning control pause.
I have a couple friends who have kids with asthma. You know, some are kind of young, like still, you know, in that toddler phase. How early could a parent have a child start working on these kinds of things if they are asthmatic and the parent wants to give their child some relief?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've worked with kids as young as 4, personally doing breathing exercises. I would say if there was a little one, you know, toddler or, you know, 2-3 years old, I would really encourage them to seek out a myofunctional therapist. You know, someone who really can help come alongside and make sure that they're, you know, getting everything that they could be getting in terms of improving their breathing. And some dentists are trained in that, you know, really focus on the breathing, aspects, you know, of it. And that's what I would say if they were really young. But once they're like 4, I mean, you could still consult one, you know, when they're older than that. But I'm just saying then there's more that breathing exercises that we can do with children as well. And just teaching them about, you know, breathing with their nose. And there's little fun things you can do like tongue pops, you know, where you click your tongue and that you've got a suction to get that tongue up on the roof of your mouth. And that can start to stimulate and remind them that's where it's supposed to be because you're designed for this to be the function. So really just giving it some of these drills will usually restore the way you're designed to do it, right? The way you're designed to breathe is through your nose. So we're just looking to restore that.
Right. So, okay. So going back, you mentioned, you know, you do your controlled pause when you wake up in the morning, but I recall when we were at your house last that you were doing some super short sprints, like inside your house and holding your breath and timing it. Can you explain, is that like a variation of the controlled pause or what was that exercise? And I think we all want to do that one too.
That's actually something else. That's work that I got from, I was studied under Patrick McEwen with Oxygen Advantage. And like I said, there's some overlap. So, you know, we do look in that system, you do look at functional breathing, like everything we've just been talking about. But then we also get into simulating altitude training. Okay. So, you know how athletes often will train at altitude, you know, for the stress that it puts on the body, but, you know, the desired outcome for the adaptions. Sure. So, yeah. So, you know, that's probably what you saw me doing. And basically that one, you don't, you'd want to make sure that your control pauses consistently over 20. And that, you know, you're not pregnant or, you know, you don't have any high blood pressure or any, you know, serious health, you know, concerns before, because that when you work with holding your breath, so for longer periods, so beyond a control pause, far beyond a control pause. This is more like you breathe in through your nose normally, you breathe out through your nose normally, you pinch your nose and you start to walk. So then as the air hunger starts to grow, you go faster. So you're starting to jog or run while holding your breath. Then I would let go of my nose and breathe in a reduced way for 5 or 6 breaths. Okay. So reduced meaning really trying to barely take in any air at all. So it's not that gasped, you know, type of breathing. And then follow that with 12 regular breaths through the nose, always through the nose.
Okay.
And that's a simulation of altitude training exercise.
And yeah. It seems like, you know, a lot of athletes in the audience, you know, assuming that they meet that like basic criteria that you just listed off, this could be, again, mm-hmm. something relatively easy to tie into your own training, you know, routine consistently to have a little bit of that physiological boost that you would get at altitude, right?
Right, right. Yeah, it's intermittent hypoxic interval training. So it's another alternative to, you know, like a HIIT type training. And, you know, there's a lot of benefits for the adaption that your body goes through. And it is a stress. So you have to be ready, you know, like we talked about, like making sure that your functional breathing, you know, is in place, but it's a way that you can create, you do disturb homeostasis and stress, but that's making the adaptions for training. And it does help improve, some studies are coming out to show it improves your aerobic base. Okay. I mean, more research is of course needed. You know, you use less energy or use less oxygen, which means better performance, right? When you're training or running, increase your tolerance to breathlessness. Yeah. So improving your anaerobic capacity.
Yeah. What's not to like about that? Kind of piggybacking off that then, I read somewhere in Oxygen Advantage that 6 breaths per minute is optimal. So this kind of ties in this whole idea of not like using in the context of training or exercise or how to boost performance, although I know it's related, but just as we're kind of going through our day, slower breathing is helpful to stimulate the vagus nerve. And this kind of ties back to what we're, you know, sort of our theme of like helping people to have better nervous system balance and all that. So, let's unpack this a little bit, you know, taking fewer breaths per minute, slowing down our breath, but not doing so in like the shallow way where we're breath holding, like we described, I've, you know, tend to do. How is this like, how can we kind of measure this within ourselves? Obviously we can count how many breaths we take per minute, but, you know, thinking of it from a broader holistic perspective, how can we make something like a 6 breaths per minute sort of like a goal that we can set for ourselves? If you agree with that, something that we should all kind of strive toward, or if you feel differently, I'd love to hear that too.
No, I think that's a great thing. You know, I would just say like, you know, set aside some time, say maybe 4 minutes, and work on timing it. So it's cadence breathing. And this is 4-second inhale for, and then a 6 second exhale. And, you know, the timer's going. So when the timer beeps, you know, I'm just saying, if you set a timer for that 4 minutes, you know, okay, I can stop. So you don't have to keep looking at the clock and thinking, you know, am I done? How long have I been doing this? I just think it's so freeing to just, okay, I put this timer on, I'm setting aside 4 minutes. And for this 4 minutes, I'm going to work on this 4 to 6 cadence. And, you know, that ties into a lot of the research with, you know, heart rate variability and heart math. And, you know, there's such good information out there. But yeah, I think that's super useful thing that you could do. And, you know, you remember, you just get comfortable and breathe in through your nose, tongue on the roof of your mouth. And usually what I see is that people can breathe in for 4 seconds, but the exhale isn't truly 6 seconds a lot of times at first. It's like it's maybe 3 seconds or 4 seconds, and then they just wait for the next inhale, you know? And so you're just practicing the art of just, can I save a little so that I can extend it a little longer.
Yeah.
You know?
And okay. So, you know, this is something that, like, I find this so relevant and important, because I feel like I've done training in this through meditation retreats, through pregnancy and preparing. Obviously, breathing is huge as you're preparing to give birth and all that kind of stuff. You know, and I just have been one of those people where I think my baseline has always been this kind of like revved up state. And for me, and I'm, you know, I'm assuming a lot of you out there too, like, to make this like the norm rather than the 4 minute exception when I'm actually consciously practicing this, like, that's the key, right? Integrating it in a way that it actually just then becomes natural. And have you had a similar journey, or like anyone that you've worked with where you had them like doing these exercises and it finally like got to a point after months, whatever, where they clicked and they're like, this is just how I live now. I don't have to consciously try to be that kind of breather.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You start to see that people who forever were mouth breathing, now they're not thinking about it. You're spending time with them and you look at them and you're realizing they're nose breathing, and I'm not hearing them breathe as loud. You know, it's a more comfortable, calmer breathing pattern. And that's what we're looking to do, is really reset that, so that becomes easier for them. Absolutely, you see that. You know, the other aspect of the training that I really want to make sure we mention is the work from Original Strength. You know, Tim Anderson and Danny Almeida, they talk a lot about breathing, and but also what we call pressing reset, sort of like, you know how like I'm just using this analogy, but, you know, like maybe your phone's not working right. And so what do? First thing you do is power it down, right? Power it back up, and it's like reset, and now it's working. So I kind of use that analogy with some of the movements that it does tie into what we're talking about with the breathing, but then other movements that can sort of be a reset to your body so that you're moving better, feeling better, all tied together. And then, you know, from there, once you've kind of done that, things start working well. So that's what I'm saying, is maybe you do some resets and now you're breathing better. You're breathing more calmly. You're breathing through your nose, your tongue's where you know, naturally want it to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And I think that's a good place to transition before we run out of time today, because, you know, you have all these other skill sets and things that you practice and instruct, including in this kind of natural movement space, this kettlebell training space. Those people, nobody's probably seen your house, but oh my gosh, you guys have like the most badass gym set up in your basement area. And I just like love visiting for that reason, besides hanging out with you guys. But I want to talk a little bit about, you know, just how we can better integrate movement snacks, as I like to call them, but, you know, natural movement, you know, having maybe a more connected approach to our time in nature. Cause I'm assuming a lot of people listening are spending quite a bit of time outdoors with their training and everything. Although interestingly, I think we're probably seeing a bit of a phenomenon where more people are spending more time indoors on, you know, Zwift and treadmills and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I want to hear just your basic philosophy on your, you know, natural movement, connection to nature, like getting your body to move in ways outside of just like this singular plane that a lot of us endurance athletes are so used to.
Yeah. Well, you know, one, I want to say, I think it's important that you are enjoying whatever your activity is, whether, you know, like, let's just say that's running. Like, I know that we all have it where it's like, there's days where it's like, okay, this is on my training plan. I don't feel like it, you know, I don't feel like going, but then you push through, you get out there, and then you end up enjoying it. So that's great. I know there's part of that. But if you're finding that you consistently aren't really enjoying it, if you're honest with yourself, I think it's time to shake it up. And make sure that you're moving in ways that lift you up and feel good and you like, you know? And so kind of being aware of that and looking for different ways. So like when I was trail running a lot, you know, I started to feel like I don't want to just run by everything. Like I'm out here on this trail and I didn't see any real critters. And I was like, does anybody else live out here? Like animals, you know? And it was like, well, of course they hear me coming, as much as I like to think I run really quietly and nice gait and all that. But like, you know, they hear you coming and they're all quiet and you keep going. So I started to think, what happens if I sit on a log for a little while and who starts to come back out? What do I hear? You know, or balance on that log for a while or hang from that tree. And of course, just giving myself space and time and permission to sort of like explore and move in those ways and not feel like it's just about what was my pace and how many miles did I get in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel like I've gone through that transformation several times over, actually. I mean, even we were just at Ironman Coeur d'Alene over the weekend and I was talking to some friends and they're like, oh, so what do you guys do these days? I'm like, you know, we got into this phase where we just didn't want to involve ourselves in like a race that included orange cones. You know, if as far as our like personal pursuits, and don't get me wrong, we'll forever love being at any Ironman event or triathlon event to be around it. But for my own like needs, like I felt like I needed to kind of like branch off from that and explore nature and my body and training in different ways than I was used to, you know, for all those years I spent triathlon training. And I think it's why I'm also so infatuated with like kind of the natural movement stuff that you do. You know, I want you to talk a little bit about some of the movements that you are doing regularly and instructing, because I still am laughing at one night at your house when we were, you know, you're just doing your thing. And I'm like, oh, I want to try that too. So you're like doing these like butt scooches on the ground and doing this like high butt bear crawl. And I'm like, I want to do it too. And we're kind of like having this like friendly competition across the floor. And you like schooled me. And I'm like, dang, like you, like you just, your body moves well. And it moves well in these ways that are a lot of people would just not even feel comfortable getting into these positions. You know what I mean? Like they're not positions that feel like natural, even though they are, let alone a way to naturally move. So talk to us a little bit about like, I don't know, like how can we, like where can we find some of these movements, or what kind of movements do you recommend, and like how can we integrate them into our own movement snack routine?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I call it floor play or groundwork, right? So getting on the ground, sitting on the floor and basically just moving, whether that's crawling, creeping, rolling, you know, just exploring the movements. A lot of ideas I've gotten, like I said, from Original Strength and the resets that they show and teach. But, you know, it's just getting down, whether it's squatting and then next thing you know, lying out on your belly and rolling over and getting up, and you know, now you're in a plank and you're just moving around up and down and finding ways to flow and see what you feel. You know, it's not exactly like positions. It's not like yoga or Pilates. It's not a specific sequence. It's just starting to explore the movements and see how it feels. And yeah, the benefits, like, you know, being on the floor and all that tactical input on your body is really important. It's like all that touch, you know, it's just totally nurturing to your nervous system. And so getting down and doing some of that like outdoors, maybe on a, you know, bring a big blanket and or towel and spread it out somewhere on the grass, or maybe you're just directly on the ground somewhere, moving around in those different ways. And I also like walking, marching, skipping, you know, in addition to running, you know, integrate some of those types of movements in. And it's like, literally you start to walk, then you start to skip and you'll just start to smile. It's like, you can't be in a bad, I mean, watch kids move and having that like curiosity of a child, and in terms of, they don't say, I'm going to skip for this many minutes necessarily. They do it until they just have this like natural sense, like, now I'm going to lay on the floor. Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, play along for however long feels about right to you, and trust that it's going to be just fine. And it's, you're going to get the benefits. I mean, you know, and yeah, the crawling, I mean, there's so many different types of crawling. Like we were doing, like you said, that high butt, I call it like bear crawl, like a big capital A where your butt's really high, or, you know, knees down or knees elevated or inverted like a crab, or, you know, I mean, there's an endless ways to crawl.
So awesome. And I mean, I think it really, I love, you know, how we talked a little bit about, you know, your experience working with kids, homeschooling your own kids, and like that concept of play, even the way that you approach therapy had this like theme of play. And you've undoubtedly tied that into, you know, this chapter of your career and your personal life too. And I'm assuming it's why, you know, one of the many reasons why, you know, you're so popular and sought out in your area is like you're giving adults permission to play. And then with this added benefit of wellness, you know, that may have been lacking from their lives or their bodies. And I love that. And I think too, like, especially what you said about the skipping, it's like a lot of us athletes will use skipping as part of a warm-up routine, but we're instructed to do this many reps and this many sets and, or that many seconds of it, and then do this exercise and then go running. And it's like still part of this like structure with like discipline involved, where it's like not this free flow as you described it. And I want people to be inspired by this idea that we can create a flow within our own training program, whether it's, you know, simply in the warm up or cool down, you know, even if you have to get serious with whatever miles and actual workout you have to put down, but like, don't lose sight of this concept of play and like getting that giddy smile on your face from just doing a set of skips, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Like, I just think it's brilliant and I love it. I think it's just brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and, you know, I have nothing against having a training plan and having a focus. Like, I don't ever mean to sound that way either, because of course there's a time and a place for that. And sometimes it's a huge relief to have a plan and not have to try to make it up in the moment. It's just about the balance, and it's just about integrating in some of this more just free flowing type of movement. And I also think it makes it more of a movement snack, because you might say, well, I'm going to get down on the floor and do some rolling around and some, you know, bird dogs or dead bugs, just different types of movements. And then I'm like, you know, back up cooking in the kitchen or whatever. And the next time I'm back down doing something else. And, you know, it just makes it, I'm just doing a little at a time, you know, and it of the seriousness out of things, and yet the benefit is profound, and you actually feel like you can move and you loosen up the hips or the legs or a little bit more mobile, a little more flexible. So like the results are real, but the feeling of it can be a little bit more casual and a little bit more fun.
Right. And I think you're right too, perfectly. Like, this is not taking away, you know, structured training plan or working with a coach. I think it's a beautiful compliment to it, you know, a way to work it in. And what I'd like to hear too is, like, to me, it seems like these little movement snacks, you know, as we're like putting our body in new positions, you know, as I work less with people in person these days. And when I do, you know, I often like to challenge people, you know, on their weaknesses. Like that's, I want to help them overcome those weaknesses as best as possible. And what I see with people is that when they're doing these, like, to them, awkward movements, but, you know, good movements, obviously, for their needs, they do what I described earlier, like a lot of breath holding or just dysfunctional breathing. So let's tie in the breathing, you know, before we wind down today, I want to tie in the breathing to this sector. Because I think a lot of us probably are doing this and may not realize it, but when we're doing something that's new to our body, be it a butt scooch on the floor or a single leg RDL or even a kettlebell swing, whatever it is, we might, if it's new or, you know, our body's not functionally like the best shape for it, we may have poor breathing. So it seems to me like this is like a great time to start to cue ourselves on what our breath is doing there. And I'm curious, like, how you kind of coach people through that, because you are working with people in person quite often, and would love to hear sort of the things that you're coaching on that part of it.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I mean, depending on what we're doing and the task, but absolutely, we want to be breathing through our nose and we don't want to hold our breath. And we're starting to bring awareness around that. You know, you're breathing and you're breathing through your nose and your tongue's in the roof of your mouth and you're doing whatever the given movement is. Now there's a time and a place that you might do some alternative breathing techniques when you get into some weightlifting and other things. But making sure that you're intentional about it, so you're not just kind of not aware of how you're breathing. And, you know, I really encourage people if they, you know, especially if they have, you know, they're working on increasing their control pause or they have certain symptoms of things that they've shared with me, you know, whether it's anxiety or something else, absolutely, I want them to work within a range that they can breathe through their nose. And when it starts to be too much, I'd rather them slow down and continue to breathe through their nose rather than go harder or faster or more. You know, that said, I know that there's some athletes out there, there's a time and a place where you go all out. Maybe you're in a big race or in a big event and you're just going to go all out and you're going to just, you know, breathe however to get through. Like, I know there's a time and a place for that, but I'm talking about sort of like the everyday training and really trying to see, with your breathing overall, you definitely want to be able to do all these movements while breathing through your nose.
Yeah. Okay. And I think just the most important thing for us is to bring our awareness to that. Like as you would in a meditation, right? Like our awareness is so much centered on the breath, but you know, maybe when we start exercising or doing movements, like we kind of lose that because we're so focused on whatever the exercise or movement is, but it's a perfect time to see what we're doing and kind of cue into that. And then changes as needed.
When you do what you love, like running, like racing, like enjoying the great outdoors, you want to do it for life. Inside Tracker can help. Inside Tracker was founded in 2009 by leading scientists in aging, genetics, and biometrics. Using their patented algorithm, Inside Tracker analyzes your body's data to provide you with a clear picture of what's going on inside of you and to offer you science-backed recommendations for positive diet and lifestyle changes. Then Inside Tracker tracks your progress every day, every step of the way toward reaching your performance goals and living a longer, healthier life. For a limited time, Endurance Planet listeners can get 25% off the entire Inside Tracker store. Just visit InsideTracker.com and enter offer code EnduranceplanetPro25. That's EnduranceplanetPro25, P-R-O, the number 25 at the end there, EnduranceplanetPro25. If you're a coach, trainer, registered dietitian, or other health and wellness practitioner, your gateway to offering your clients Inside Tracker is Inside Tracker Pro. In addition to helping your clients perform better than ever, with Inside Tracker Pro, you'll also get discounts and earn revenue. Plus, you'll get free access to the Inside Tracker Pro Resource Center and a free personal coach dashboard for secure access to your clients' Inside Tracker results and recommendations. Earn revenue, enjoy discounts, and help your clients perform better than ever with Inside Tracker Pro. Visit insidetracker.com/endurance planet to get started.
Let's end on a little bit about getting outside. You know, you guys live in this beautiful area of North Carolina where you have nature at your doorstep and just, you know, access to a lot of amazing things out there. And you know, not everybody has that, but I think everybody can at least be close enough to it, even if it's a big park in a city, to utilize this stuff. And so, you know, I was like, what if, you know, you had some guy that just moved to North Carolina and say he's from like a big city and total gym rat, and you cross paths with him and he's interested in, you know, kettlebell classes, and but also like was posing to you like, what the heck is the point of like doing this stuff outside or like climbing under a fallen tree or whatever it is, when you could go into a gym with four concrete walls and get way more quality done with a squat rack. So what's kind of your argument to that mentality, or your, you know, your take on, you know, why being within four concrete walls isn't the be all end all?
Yeah. I mean, there's something to be said for the resiliency that you gain from being outside rather than in a climate controlled sort of environment, you know, within nature. You know, the handles aren't really on anything. So you're, the ankle stability from going over a trail or picking up, say, a rock or balancing on a log or hanging from a tree branch rather than from just a bar. So, you know, time and a place for everything. I get that, you know, the gym is great for people who have access to that and want that. But, you know, there's also that element of, you know, endurance and strength is really only useful in your ability to apply it. So you really want to make sure that whatever you're training in the gym isn't only when you're in a gym, and that you can actually move and be strong and lift and carry and be in those sort of real life situations, right?
Love it.
Health is, you know, both emotional and physical. And there's just so much that can be gained from that green exposure, that immersion in nature.
I agree more. You know, I feel it's obviously has the forest bathing. I think that's also becoming, you know, more at the forefront of the benefits of being nature in that sense. But, you know, as we've spent many, many months, you know, over the past several years in our van and traveling around and camping in all these places and being, you know, immersed in all these different natural environments, like, the idea of resiliency, I think, really rings true. Like it's a form of therapy, not just because it nourishes the soul, but I think it also, like, there's scary things out there too. Like, and you get a little bit more used to just living among that. And, you know, obviously not being careless about, you know, things, like you're being cognizant and careful, but also not like living in fear and being too trapped, you know, in this like perfectly curated air temperature controlled environment. I think that like we lose a little bit of that, and like getting back to that like primal nature of like connection to nature, like there's a little bit of like a overcoming a little bit of fear and then like reaping the benefits of that, that I think is a beautiful thing too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
it's right on.
You know, like you guys live in an area where there's snakes and probably other things, like, and, but you guys don't seem to like worry. Like, it's just, it's the environment. You just live among it, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly what you said. It's like, you do want to know your environment, right? You should know what is out there or whatever, something about your environment, right? So I know that we have, for example, copperheads. I know that that's a venomous snake that I need to be aware of. So it's not like I'm just going to say, you know, nature is just beautiful and wonderful and nothing can hurt me here, right? But at the same time, you know, it's not being controlled by that fear, just a level-headed sense of, you know, I'm going to pay attention. Where do they tend to live? How do I, if I'm moving a log or a rock, do I roll it towards me or away? Well, you know, if you roll it away from you, then the snake's going to most likely come towards you. So you want to go the other way. You know, it's like little things that you learn from being out there and being smart about it and, you know, getting used to what it's like to be in that environment. And, you know, the other thing I was going to say is, you know, going out in nature and it's not like it's separate from us. It's like we are nature, like we are connected. And so I think that even if it's not, like you said, deep in a wilderness, but it's just like a park or something, like going and immersing yourself there, being by, you know, the trees or the plants or whatever, it's going to have a benefit for you. And think of how you're going to breathe in that situation. I mean, when you've gone on your trips and you've watched the sunrise, you might not have been thinking about your breathing, but most likely it was calm, right? Those exposures to nature are going to help. So that's what I'm saying. It all ties together. It all ties together. So, you know, immersing yourself in some natural sort of parks, botanical gardens, nature trail, you know, tying that in, and then obviously also like doing these movements and these movement snacks and these original strength resets and these breathing drills, you know, it all comes together. And it doesn't have to take a crazy amount of time, but it's more consistency. It's more a little at a time.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
You know, we take coffee breaks at work, or, you know, some people might take a cigarette break, you know, I mean, but do we take a movement break? You know, do we stand up and just move for a moment? It's like, you know, once you think of it, you're like, yeah, you know, actually, if I can take, you know, a coffee break, I can probably get up and move around and just do some cross crawls or, you know, overhead reach, or, you know, just move my shoulders around a bit. I can definitely make sure my tongue's on the roof of my mouth, you know.
So. Absolutely. I think it's so important. It's funny, you know, because that's something I've given to people, like cues, like, okay, if you're at a desk job, we know that that's non-negotiable at some point. I mean, we can do things to make it a stand-up desk or whatever, but like the fact is you have to sit or be at a computer screen for X amount of hours per day. So just commit to like getting up every 20 minutes or something. And it's funny because that's a very difficult thing for people to create as a habit. Like it really is. I mean, whether working a time or setting a timer works, but it's just not something that I think is something easy, because a lot of us, as I was describing earlier too with myself, like we get kind of in the zone and then we're like an hour goes by and we're like, oh crap, I forgot to do what I was supposed to do. And I'm mouth breathing or hyperventilating or whatever it is in the moment. So, you know, I think as we wind down today, it's just, you know, taking time to remember that those little small things add up, right? Like that seems to be a big part of how you operate in your life, is like the little pieces like add up into big results with time. I want to ask, you know, as we wind down, like last question, like, you know, you have a husband who's been to Kona multiple times and has done all these endurance races and triathlons, running, you name it. You have three kids, one of whom is now in college and the other two are, you know, not too far behind, and you're running a business. Like a few big takeaways, like for our audience, like if you were to have like, or, you know, analyze your habits or adopt any new habits right now to really kind of bring this holistic wellness piece home to you, like what would that be?
I would say one, to focus on breathing through your nose with your tongue in place. That's a huge piece that I think is really mostly accessible to anyone to start working on. Going outside for any amount of time, even if it's on a patio or a porch that you have, you know, whatever you have access to, going outside each day. And you know, there's a naturalist, John Young, that I like to read, what he puts out on his work, and he talks about a sit spot. And so, you know, you might expect that I'm going to say, you know, everybody do swings every day for kettlebells or run this amount of miles. But actually I would say, you know, find a place that you can access that's close enough to where you live, your house, and go there to the same spot each day and do this sit spot. And, you know, it can be a few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes, and sit there each day for a few minutes and just start to know, you'll start to see whatever you see. You'll observe things differently. You'll see the seasons change around you. And I think it has an immense mental health and physical health benefit.
It's beautiful. I love it. And I hope everybody finds that spot for themselves, as we close out today. Think about it, people, and make it happen. I know you can do it. That's something we can all do for ourselves. And it's such great advice. So Mary Beth, thank you so much. You are a wealth of knowledge. I could talk to you about 8 gajillion other things. So maybe we'll have to just have a girl chat sometime soon, but I really appreciate you coming on for this episode. It's just been such a compliment to all the things that I like to share with our audience. And so, yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Tani.
And we will include resources to where you can follow Mary Beth, get a hold of her if you're in the North Carolina area, you know, get some one-on-one time or group class time with her. And in the meantime, this is your host, Tani Gibson, signing off, wishing you success in all of your training and racing.
The views and opinions of participants of the Endurance Planet podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinion of Endurance Planet Incorporated. The topics discussed on the podcast are for entertainment purposes only and not intended to be medical or professional advice. Make sure to consult your physician or other professional before attempting any exercise, diet, or supplement changes.